You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 23rd of May 2015 on Monocle 24. Contemporary art, graphic design, literature, poetry, philosophy and experimental music. It's all covered in print as a prestigious London cultural space is taken over by those who just love to publish. We say hi and bye to Thai high society. Plus we get down to some serious transatlantic table talk. That's all today on The Stack. Today on The Stack, we'll be joined by two print-mad guests as London's Tate Modern hosts publishing extravaganza off-print this weekend. We'll be hearing from New York and from the young editor of culture title Table Talk as he launches his second issue.
Each issue focuses on an experience in life that we all have, or a sensation, but that's really difficult to describe, that we can't put words to.
Plus, we'll be consuming a Thai treat, and not of the culinary variety, as we review and praise the wonderful Thailand Tatler magazine. All that coming up on this edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. This weekend, print aficionados in London are in for something of a treat. Off-Print Projects is a travelling art publishing fair featuring discerning projects across a wide range of media. Running in Paris for 5 years, the fair is coming to London for the first time and will be presented in the iconic Turbine Hall at Tate Modern. The 2015 London Fair will present books, zines, vinyl, posters, prints, websites, magazines, blogs from more than 140 participants in the fields of contemporary art, graphic design, literature, poetry, philosophy and experimental music. And I'm lucky to be joined here in the studio today by two gentlemen that are very much involved in off-print. Bruno Cheskel is the director of Self-Publish Be Happy, or SPBH, the organisation that's hosting this year's off-print. SPBH collects, promotes and studies contemporary self-published photo books. Over the years, they've collected more than 1,000 publications and produced many workshops, talks and projects. Also with us is Yannick Aboui, a former journalist and bookseller from France, and the founder and director of Off-Print Projects. Acknowledging a dissolving effect of traditional sites and media, Off-Print showcases an alliance between printed strategies and digital cultures. Yannick and Bruno, welcome both to the programme. Great to have you with us. Yannick, perhaps I'll start with you. I don't know if I did it justice there, really, talking about this weekend's events and what goes into it. Just let our listeners know, maybe they're thinking of heading on down to join you guys. What exactly is behind the project that's in London?
Well, it's something I started in 2010 when I was a book dealer in Amsterdam. I started as a rare book dealer. I was really into rare books, rare artist books, rare photo books. And strangely, I got quite many artists, graphic designers, architects, writers, pretty young from academy, bringing their own publication. And I told them, listen, I have some collectors, but it's probably too emerging what you do for them. But let's give it a try. And I started to sell like really, really specific, really strong, small publications, zines, artist books from super young kids just graduating the academy, the Rietveld Academy mainly, and the Rex Academy. And it was really successful. So I started to say to people, just send me more. We see what, from a business point of view, if it works or not. And it worked actually very much. And I started to have like this flow of publication because I opened the doors to all these really young people self-publishing. And I started to get so many a day, because as soon as I opened the shop for this publication, I got also people from London, from Zurich, from New York, Los Angeles, everyone getting in touch with me to say, could you help me to sell those publications? Because they are so specific, so new, that there's no bookshops willing to get them. So somehow I became, with the shop, a sort of place for like these really emerging practices in art, graphic design, photography. We were using publishing as main tool. But after 1 or 2 years, it was just too much for me, too much to deal, too much. The flow was huge. And I said, listen, I'm going to rent a space and everyone going to bring his own things. And you're going to meet up the people, we're going to talk to each other. And I'm going to have just table in a row and everyone mind his own business. And I had 15 participants in 2010, and I had like 4,000 or 5,000 people without any promotion, any email sent, any Facebook at that time was just mouth to mouth. And it was packed, packed, packed. Even myself, I didn't know what I have in my hands. and it was after 3 days, everyone was selling so much that I realized, oh, there's something going on in 2010 about this. And in 2011, I extended the fair, which was not a fair. It was just a place that I was renting tables. And I got probably 120 publishers, really publishers extremely focused from academies all over the world, from London. It was just crazy. Something like you get the whole internet focusing on you in the art scene. And I got 120 participants. And again, super successful. And now we're in 2015. And I'm at the Tate Modern in the Turbin Hall. I have 150 publishers participating. I have experimental music. I have graphic design, contemporary art. And we have a focus on photo books with Simon Baker, the curator of the Tate. There's some things going on. I don't know what it is, but the art scene is really busy with publishing and it's quite successful. First issue in London, we'll see what's going on.
Well, Bruno, let's bring you in here. And it's interesting what Yannick was saying there about how this seems to fit very neatly with the self-publishing, you know, phenomenon, the fact that so many people wanted to use that outlet. How important is it to have an event like the London branch now starting to build on that and to keep that momentum going?
I think it is really important. I mean, the experience with Publish Be Happy is very similar to Yannick. In fact, the Project Space at Tate is our fifth anniversary as well. And I think it's not surprising that happened at the same time. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, the landscape in publishing was very different from the one that we know now. And of course, you know, if you think about the bookstores that were around, et cetera, and they're not anymore around the big chains, and why there are so many new, smaller bookstores that have started in all big cities, London included. I mean, if I think about photo books, for example, I can name 5 or 6 really specialized bookstores. So having Offprint here, it's a recognition of an existing big scene in London, where there's a lot of young people that are making interesting publication in form of periodicals, books, zine, and anything in between. It is a celebration of something that is really quite British. You know, if I think about, for example, the zine culture, and you think about the zine in relation to music, I mean, people always think about the punk scene, but, you know, New Romantics and et cetera, et cetera. It was very much a British thing. This idea of communicating through something that is a printed matter. Most of the people involved, they don't do it for the money. Mm. Like the people that were doing the punk zine in the 70s and the 80s, it was a mean to talk to each other, to express each other. And that's why Tate Modern is doing it, because it's not a commercial endeavor. It's more supporting the arts and supporting the artists that are making these publications.
So, Brendan, explain a little more about then how, I mean, I don't know how you'd characterize your work with this project. Is it a collaborative effort, or how does it actually work in terms of your work with Yannick and with the overall project?
Well, Yannick and Offprint are running the fair. Why Offprint and Tate Modern has commissioned me and Subpublish Be Happy to run a project space, which is basically in the middle of the Turbine Hall. There is this strange construction made of 500 plastic boxes. And in there, we've been running workshops and performances. So I've invited 15 different artists to come down and make things, partly to invite people to join in and do stuff with them and learning skills. And partly is also to challenge people to rethink about the relationship between photography specifically and the printed matter.
That's Bruno Cheskel and Yannick Buys here on The Stack. More from them a little later. Up next, though, on the programme, we're going to head to New York for some table talk. You're listening to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Now we head to New York and to a culture title launched last year. Table Talk set out to be an alternative literary publication that forms an erudite, contemporary and fresh take on writing, both old and new. Table Talk recently launched its second issue. We spoke to its editor, Benjamin Moe.
Table Talk is a redefined literary magazine that really wants to push the borders of what a literary publication can be. And the way it does that is that each issue focuses on an experience in life that we all have, or a sensation but that's really difficult to describe, that we can't put words to. And then it invites contributors and perspectives from all over, from all walks of life, to look at it from different angles. So, for example, the inspiration for the magazine, where it really all started, was with the theme of the first issue, which is duende. And duende is a Spanish word that loosely describes the chills that we get when we're moved by a powerful song or performance. Just imagine this intense solo or, you know, a voice just escalating, and it's sending chills and goosebumps down your skin.
Hold me close and hold me fast. The magic spell you cast. This is La Vie en Rose.
And it's this very visceral, almost magical reaction that we have to art and creativity that no one really talks about that much, or kind of, you know, just says, oh, those are chills. But we discovered this word that kind of speaks to it and wanted to explore it more and kind of think about more how it affects, you know, different artistic practices, different people's lives. And so that word, which I found so fascinated and which I had experienced since I was young, really informed the making of the magazine. And then from there on, we wanted to discover more words like this. And then the name itself, Table Talk, really is about how the magazine is kind of like wants to be a conversation around a dinner table. So all these different perspectives, from boxers to rock climbers, deep sea divers, poets, philosophers, their different articles and contributions form a conversation. But at the end of the day, at the end of the night, there's kind of a main theme to that conversation, if you look back. And so we want to imbue literary magazines with that kind of informality and sense of storytelling that we feel have been missing. So that's really where the name came about. The second issue focuses around the word dino, which comes from rock climbing. So in rock climbing, the rock climber usually needs 3 points of stability to safely navigate an ascent. But there's some points where they get to an obstacle or an impediment, and they have to let go of the rock face and leap into midair, trying to reach the hold above. And it's this moment where we risk our safety, we risk everything in order to achieve something extraordinary and improbable. And we felt that this experience doesn't just relate to rock climbing, it relates to all of our lives. It relates to the moment before the stand-up comic steps out on stage and they're fidgeting with their notes. It's that leap to kind of to go out there and do it. And once you take that, something really wonderful can come about. So the whole issue focuses on that from all these different angles. One of the things that's distinctive about the magazine, and which kind of runs through all the issues, is that the theme is kind of visually based within the pages. So for each issue, we go to a place that's kind of very beautiful and magical to photograph, and we take photographs that are threaded through the entire issue. So the reader really feels like they are somewhere, that they're traversing through this united story that's not just fragmented pieces. DJ Spooky is a fascinating character. He is primarily a turntablist and electronic artist, but he also is a magazine editor and a performer. And he does interesting things like go to Antarctica and sample melting ice and then mix that into music. So he was really kind of focusing and working around expanding the borders of what music can be. So he interviewed Stan Douglas, who is a wonderful Canadian artist, for this issue. And Stan Douglas has this piece that premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival called Circa 1948, and DJ Spooky interviewed him about that. And Circa 1948 is a video game which is set in 1948 Vancouver, and you walk through the streets of 1948 Vancouver, and there's voices that you hear, veterans coming back from the war, everything is immaculate, the graphics are excellent, and it really gives you a sense of what it was like to be there, and you inhabit this other space. So it's kind of testing with the boundaries of what video games can be. We chose it for the issue because it is a leap towards new artistic directions and redefining what video art and video games can achieve.
Ode to the Maggot. A brother of the blowfly and Godhead, you work magic over battlefields.
Yosef Komunyakaa is a really interesting character. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, extremely accomplished. He teaches at NYU, and his poetry kind of deals with the intersections between the written word and blues and musicality. So he tries to infuse It's poetry with a sort of blues intonation, with blues vocabulary and language, which really gives it a sort of almost song-like texture.
No decree or creed can outlaw you as you take every living thing apart. Little master of earth, no one gets to heaven without going through you first.
What's amazing is that, I mean, his poetry is beautiful to hear out loud, but it also, off the page, almost feels like it's being read. What he did for us was he strung together some of his favorite poems from the past few years and talked about them in the issue and talked about this idea of blues and experimentation. And I think that's something that runs through what Table Talk is trying to do, is that it doesn't just want, you know, to publish just poetry like that. Whatever piece it does, it kind of wants to do it in an unorthodox fashion. So I think throughout all the pieces, we want to give the reader something that they don't expect, which kind of makes the story more vibrant, hopefully.
That was Benjamin Moe there, editor of New York-based culture title Table Talk. And we were having a bit of a leaf through the latest edition of Table Talk whilst we were listening to that. Yannick, I wonder, is that an emotion you understand, this idea of duende, the moment when you're moved by something you see, whether it's a great piece of art or a photograph or something? Does it sort of tap into something you understand?
Oh, it is. It is definitely something you cannot... It's very difficult to name when you have an experience, especially in art, which give you a pleasure, but is it an intellectual pleasure? Is it very emotional? But you have this thrill in you that, you know, have it always when I get an artist's book and I get the point and I get how complex it is. And after 2 minutes talking to often the really weird publisher I'm facing because he was focusing 5 years on this publication, which is totally not rational for someone rational. And then you get the point of what you have in your hands, and it's totally, yeah, I think, I don't know if it's duende, but it's something.
But it's something, exactly. Yeah. And Bruno, I wonder, again, what did you make of that? Just Table Talk from a first glance. It's a nice looking title. Does it appeal to you?
It does. I have a real passion for magazines. And it's been interesting to see the kind of renaissance of magazine after, towards the mid-2000s. It seemed that that was the kind of old news. And it's interesting to see, you know, walking into a fair when a couple of years ago people were declaring the death of printed paper.
As they like to do every now and then.
Yeah, every now and then. But then, you know, there's been the time in which, because of the Kindle, because of those tablets, people really thought this is it. But then you see the amount of publication, and it's not just the number of it, but the passion that people put into them, that is just overwhelming.
I like the idea of the irrational passion that you were talking about, Yannick, before. Bruno, you have a couple of things that you brought in with you today, I think. Are they sort of various sort of printed products? Maybe you could talk us through some of the things you have with you as we continue to celebrate all good things print.
Yeah. I brought in a series of publications that we are making. It's called SPBH Book Club. It's basically something between a periodical and a book in a kind of old tradition of books that are you subscribe and they're sent to you. And it's not really a book, it's something in between a book and a magazine, I guess, or a periodical, I should say. And each publication is given to an artist that within the specific form of the object, rethink about the content and also the material. So it's always the same size, people subscribe and they get it home. They never know what they're going to receive. So the latest one is by Lucas Blaylock. The previous one is by Melinda Gibson. And it's an interesting one because it's a series of photographs of the aftermath of a fire that destroyed her studio. And she decided, and maybe that's the kind of emotion that we were talking about earlier, she decided in a sort of ritualistic manner to smoke each book. So she engineered this strange, it's like a greenhouse where she has fire and she smoked the book. So the idea is that when you pick up the book and it's sent to you and you pick it up, you can smell. Because of course, one of the things that the aftermath of the fire, things weren't destroyed. They were wet by the water and they were smoked by the smoke of the fire. So there is that kind of specific strange smell that impregnates everything that has been exposed to. So it's an interesting thing about the printer matter that becomes an object. A lot of time when I talk about books and publication, one forget that the experience is the experience of touching an object. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think, you know, there are going to be thousands and thousands of people going through the Tate, because it's that very specific experience of touching an object and having an intimate experience with the printed matter.
I mean, Yannick, we often come back to that here on the stack, the idea of the tactile, the unique quality of having the physical thing. Are you a fan just of print, of anything printed? Because you already mentioned it, art books or pamphlets or zines. There's such a wide range. Is it just its printed existence that pleases you? Or, you know, you mentioned you started with rare books, which have such an incredibly powerful, you know, the aromas, the sounds as the pages turn. Everything about them is powerful and evocative. What is it about the printed matter that means so much to you?
You know, when I get the Table Talk, for instance, my first feeling was, not that it's printed, even it's printed, but the printing aspect gave me the feeling of people doing something which has been said now being not rational. It has to be digital. It has to be online. Well, I'm totally not into this idea that it's digital versus printed. I think both are really nice, and I'm on social networks. I'm reading newspapers also online. So I'm totally fine with this. So I'm not into this like idea that printed is like the whole world, we should keep the world that way. I think it's totally stupid. But what is nice with those printed things that they are in the world which is coming, which is very much under the reign of technology, there's something like a voice of trying to resist and to say, this is not rational, there's probably no business model behind this. That's what we think. And even if you read what this is about, it's like, a duende, this is no topic for a magazine. Mm. There is no money when you go to an advertiser and say, we're going to do a duende things, and it's going to be with a climbers who jump a reef, and he's going to speak about how he feels. Where is the money when you do this? But you feel like, okay, those people are weird, and I really want them at Offprint, because yeah, it's obvious you're starving every month, you cannot pay the rent. Beautiful, you know. Kids would be rational, it would be at Google or Amazon. It would not be at Offprint. And that's what I like with like people from literature, graphic designer. They do only nonsense things, which is a form of resistance nowadays to say there's quite much technology. It's beautiful, but it's also something we don't control anymore. And maybe we should think about this. And one of the way to think about this is to do printed matters, because printed matter is exactly the sign of the old world, the non-rational, and just for focusing on the future. And I say, no, I'm going to do something which is strange and I like it. And doesn't matter if you think it's weird, fine.
I mean, the experience of, for example, seeing a photograph or a typography on paper is still the best way for us to look at it. I mean, I'm like Yannick, I consume a lot of digital visual culture and I enjoy it. And it's not one versus the other one. But I haven't experienced anything digital in terms of photographic reproduction or typography. I mean, one of the things with Table Talk, as soon as I picked it up, I immediately had a hard on with a typography. So do you see, you can't have, you know, the website can emulate that, but of course there's not control of it. So until we're going to have something that can substitute the printed page, the printed page is still the best.
I think that's a pretty good point on which to leave it. Bruno and Yannick, thanks to you both for coming to talk to us here on the stack, and good luck with Offprint. Remind us briefly, Yannick, where people can continue to enjoy it this weekend in London at Tate.
Yeah, still Saturday, Sunday, Monday running from 12 to 8 p.m. on Saturday, 12 to 6 p.m. Sunday and Monday. It's free entrance in the Turbine Hall.
So get down to Tate Modern.
Go back to work.
Thanks, guys. You're listening to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Now to our new regular feature on the programme, where our editors and contributors speak in praise of their findings on the newsstand. And so to Bangkok and to the pages of what's become one of Thai high society's most important reference points, Thailand Tatler magazine. Speaking in praise of Thailand Tatler is none other than our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé.
I first came across Thailand Tatler in the departure lounge for Cathay Pacific at Bangkok's Sirvanabhum International Airport. And of course, like so many airports, you have a lineup of the predictable international news weeklies, etc. But there was this very glossy magazine standing out amongst everything else. And at first I read the Tatler strap line at the top, and I thought, oh, of course, well, this is the British edition. But then I noticed, of course, Thailand stacked above it. And yeah, I guess the endorsement line, Life Extraordinary. It's very different, though, if anyone's familiar with the British edition of Tatler. This is much more society. So perhaps in many ways, it is very sort of true to the Tatler that people might be more familiar with from the 1970s or 1980s. And there's a real focus on party pictures, and not just one or two party pictures. And I think that is my real fascination with the magazine, because you're immediately immersed into society life, not just in Bangkok, but you are taken to Koh Samui and parties in Phuket and Chiang Mai. And I guess one of the slightly sort of naughty pleasures that I have with this magazine are the hairstyles, because there is something about a Thai woman north of 55 where they have these extraordinary, they're the original helmet hairdos that these women have. I mean, just the amount of shellacking that goes on, and the dresses, and then, of course, the offspring as well. And one of the things you really notice about the magazine, as you go from page to page, there are so many people, of course, are real fixtures of Thai society, and whether that is the nightlife launch for a new bar or a new vodka in the region, or it's for a wedding. There's nothing extraordinary about the cover. You always have a very beautiful socialite or handsome socialite. Sometimes it can be a couple. Of course, this being Tatler, they're very focused on weddings. So I'm looking at the March issue. And so we have Proudputh Lip Tapanlop on the cover, at work and play. And there's always, of course, the role of the socialite, her very busy life, of course, with a battalion of staff at home. And then all of the other, of course, things that he or she might be involved with as well. When you look at the layout of the magazine, there's nothing remarkable or outstanding. It's not going to win any international design awards, and it's not setting out to do that. Of course, it knows its audience very, very well. So you have to have very clear photography. You have to be, of course, very good at getting all of the captions right, because I could imagine that you'd have some rather furious people in Thai society who'd be quite upset if you got their names wrong, which tend to be on average 27 characters in length for the last names. And then you have to be able to show watch as well, because, of course, you look at the advertising lineup. Here is a title which I would say is largely backed by real estate advertising. Of course, luxury watches, cars play a bit of a role, hotel groups, and then, of course, the regional banks are also important from an advertising perspective.
That was Monocle's editor-in-chief Tyler Brulé speaking in praise of Thailand Tatler magazine. And that is all we have time for on this edition 144 of The Stack, with me, Tom Edwards. Special thanks to my studio guests, Bruno Cheskel and Yannick Buis, who'll be at Offprint, as we heard, the independent publishing fair at London's Tate Modern, through till Monday. Thanks to our producer, David Pleasant, and our studio manager, Claire Urban. Any comments or queries are welcome. info@monocle.com is what you need. And don't forget to join us at the same time next week. Tune in again, if you can't wait that long, at monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud. From me and the team, though, for now, it's goodbye.